Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear industry experts weigh in on the impact these stories are having on the industry. And I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Today's guest is a, can't be said in one sentence, so bear with me. She is a official member of Forbes Technology Council, listed as 20 most influential women in cannabis, designated as one of the most powerful women to watch in DC, two-time Stevie Award Maverick of the Year, 2019 Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year, Moxie Award nominee, creator of the InterCan Alliance, and finally founder and CEO of New Frontier Data. Woo! Please welcome Giada Aguiar de Garcer. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I will have one quick correction. I was nominated for the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year, but I did not actually win it. But it's a pleasure to be here.
Did I miss anything else? Any Miss Universe or Miss America? Anything?
Yeah, no, that's soon. I'm working on that.
All right. Well, start achieving something, please. Well, there's lots of happening right now, so we're going to dive right in. Let's first get started in the finance sector. 2020 was thought to be the year for stabilization in the cannabis industry. Motley Fool reported big changes coming to the cannabis industry, and most of these changes started taking place before the coronavirus has taken center stage. The article touches on many of the biggest names in Canada calling for major layoffs, and most cannabis companies who are working towards acquisitions are holding off right now and focusing on cutting costs in order to weather the storm. Essentially, growth opportunities are off the table for the time being, and smaller companies who were in growth mode are really going to struggle. Giada, are you personally seeing this as far as investors backing away or putting a pin in everything?
Excellent question and really good headline and article. So it's mixed bag, and it depends on where you're looking. Late last year, I guess beginning the summer of last year, towards late last year, we did see, because of what was happening specifically in the public market and cannabis public market in Canada, sort of a shift away from what we've seen as traditional investment sources. So we reported this a few years back. For a long time, when you looked at investment flowing into the United States cannabis sector and North America in general, there was a lot of Canadian money coming in. So Canadian investors, the Canadian investment flow has certainly slowed down, if not dried up, in a big way. And the same can be said about U.S.-based investment. It certainly has slowed down. But again, only from a traditional investment perspective, meaning the investment we were used to getting. What has also occurred, which is interesting, though, and even now with the pandemic, we're beginning to see some transition into this, is new pockets of investments being activated. Now, what does that mean? It means that from a geographic perspective, we're beginning to see investment coming from outside of North America into North America, specifically the U.S. So, for instance, from Europe, quite a bit, from Australia, so Asia Pacific, as well as from Latin America. I would say mostly from Europe, but the other two regions are certainly also active. New Frontier Data itself has been the recipient of and impacted by that transition. Now, from a traditional versus non-traditional, which is sort of, I don't mean traditional in the financial meaning of the word, more for us, we're beginning to see investment coming in from other types of investors, for lack of a better term. So 2015, 2016, there was a lot of high net worth individual type of investment. 2016, 2017, we began to see sort of the family offices coming in. 2018, 2019 is what is considered institutional investment was coming in, but from very particular types of funds. While those funds may not be investing right now, we're now seeing different kind of funds. So funds that are more interested in growth investments, right? For the past 5 years, we have still seen a lot of what they call seed investment, right? Early stage investment. And now what's happening is startups may have maybe challenged in terms of receiving money, but companies that are in growth and scaling mode, they are investors now, a new breed of investors and that are coming in looking to help those companies grow and scale. So not all bleak. It's a transition.
Got it. So when people, you hear them saying that the cannabis industry is recession-proof, is that something you would agree with?
And of course, I have to be careful because we have to stick to the facts. And one quick disclosure, right? we're continuing to see this and track this. We will see how it all ends up. These are very early trends in a very fluid situation in many aspects. I don't know that I would say completely recession-proof, but I would say that relative to other industries, it certainly is much more protected, and it is likely to fare relatively better. This is not huge news, because it's sort of we know that in times of economic downturn, there are certain industries, right, certain profiles of industry that fare better, and the cannabis industry fits that profile, right? So things such as alcohol, tobacco, condoms, things like that, believe it or not, do better just because of human behavior. So from that perspective, consumption is not going anywhere. Now, the reason I don't want to go out to say it's completely recession-proof is because it remains our job and our responsibility to ensure that while consumption remains, that the supply chain is solid enough to support it. And then comes the responsibility of regulation to also ensure that that supply chain can stay active. So I'm optimistic. New Frontier Data is optimistic. The data so far shows that the industry is faring better and is in a better position to continue to fare well. And let's hope that very soon we can say that indeed it may be relatively recession-proof.
Well, that is good news all around then. Well, we'll move on. I mean, as we know, the larger Canadian companies are having to cut costs and layoffs. Small businesses in the U.S. are also facing struggles due to the federal illegality of cannabis. HeidiErnestLaw.com reported on the financial assistance and resources for cannabis companies during the coronavirus pandemic. What we've seen is that they are not getting the same offers as small businesses, even if they are operating legally under state law. What she had mentioned is that local governments have been stepping up to help out local cannabis businesses, which will hopefully get them through this. And as a CEO, can you walk us through some considerations businesses are faced in this time of uncertainty?
Excellent question. And again, fluid. the bottom line is federal support is going to be difficult to come by because cannabis remains federally illegal. So things such as SBA loans and things of the sort are going to be tricky. I think there's also going to be a differentiation between plant-touching businesses and non-plant-touching businesses. I would expect that may occur, and the non-plant-touching businesses, so ancillary services provider, may push to qualify. Too early to say whether that will occur. But overall, it is going to be tricky, very tricky, if not challenging, to receive any help. Now, and I think we touched on this on the accounting and financial management webinar that we had not so long ago. The fact that taxes are being that there's a grace period on taxes certainly will help, and individuals will get sort of the grants and help that the government is giving out. So that help is there and will help with some sort of cash flow. But overall, the type of support that other small businesses are going to receive is unlikely to be available or accessible in the same way to cannabis businesses, especially small businesses. I don't want to again leave this on a completely negative note. While it is challenging, there are things that can be done. I know you haven't asked, but I'm going to go out there and say it. And this is more me talking as a CEO and a business owner in the cannabis sector more than anything else. The industry, another trend in the industry that continues is this consolidation, right? And we began to see that last year, and it certainly took much more of a strength as far as a driving force in shaping the market towards the end of last year. Consolidation, meaning companies merging with each other, companies being acquired. Sometimes companies unfortunately going out of business, but overall trying to survive by joining forces, by sort of merging or being acquired, etc. I think that rather than being passively waiting for that to occur, there may be an opportunity to proactively look at such solution. It may not be anyone's first choice as a business owner, right? I understand what that may feel like, but if the alternative is going out of business, it is something that maybe should be looked into. There are companies that are larger and doing better. There are companies that are looking to expand across states. across nations. And so proactively looking for that help may be the survival plan for many smaller companies that are not going to receive the support. That is also, then also, we also have the fact that consumption continues. So hopefully that will, in many ways, help. But again, the just because we will not have access to federal help does not mean that we don't have other ways to help ourselves. So people should be creative.
Well, I'm sure a lot of small business owners will appreciate hearing that, especially because, you know, as an individual, we all worry about our families. But as CEOs and owners of businesses, you're worrying about 50, 100, 150 people's families. So I know the pressure is on to make it work for everybody.
One great thing about this industry, other than the innovation and creativity and resilience, mind you, there is such a thing as industries having personalities, in my humble opinion. Especially now, but as I experienced this also early on, 2014, 2015, there's a sense of community, maybe the wrong word, but it's the only one that comes to mind. During this time of crisis, for instance, we recently had this global virtual event. It was a massive undertaking because it was across 7 time zones and 16 nations. It was a great success. It was wonderful. But one of the reasons it was a great success is because everyone involved was open and willing and able to collaborate. The cannabis industry in general and entities and organizations within tend to be open to that collaboration. So reaching out and asking for help and finding a way to join forces to help one another is also something that I would hope and candidly expect that that we see more of at this time of a crisis that we all face.
Exactly. Well, we're going to touch on the town hall in just a bit, but as far as just coming together, you know, the industry is really seeing a duality. With one hand, these cannabis businesses are being deemed essential businesses and allowed to operate on state levels when everything else is shut down. And on the other hand, they're restricted from receiving federal aid. Do you think that, you know, in the aftermath of all of this, this will strengthen our position to get legalization on a federal level?
Listen, we put out predictions, but I don't know that we have a crystal ball. As data to substantiate one way or another is currently unavailable. However, an educated guess would be that it seems that it might. And here is why, right? So some of the forces at play here are, you mentioned two of them, obviously. But the big one, I guess, that I see is, it is clear to anyone, you know, any policymaker, right, that the economy is hurting and everyone is trying to think very creatively on ways to sort of soften the blow and continue to sustain the economy. So they are watching out for those industry blocks, industry niches that continue to generate revenue and can support. And the cannabis industry is without a doubt one of them. There's a reason why they're essential. Of course, there's the medicinal reasons as well. But as a revenue generator, it obviously, there's a need, there's a lot of demand, and consumption is live and well. And as such, it may be, depending on how dire the crisis is and what policymakers see as the few options, that the option of legalizing federally is one that the policymakers will see as benefiting the entire nation, not just the states that have legalized. So that would be my guess, is that it certainly will weigh on policymakers. I would be surprised if they're not thinking about it or looking at it. Now, there are many other driving forces, however, that could make it difficult, whether it is political sort of parties or others. We are, you know,
we're in an election year, so there's a lot.
And I was about to say, and it's an election year. That's a double-edged sword, right? So interesting times. I try to be optimistic, but whether the current crisis, whether economic pandemic, is a catalyst to federal legalization or not, the cannabis industry will remain relatively strong. And I think it will continue to support the economy, even if it's just the states that have legalized, which are many right now. So we'll see.
Awesome. Well, before we wrap up this section, I do think it's worth mentioning Global News Canada reported that Canada's government business bank is making credit available to any legal businesses. However, they did have a caveat that they have to show that they were would have been able to handle this loan before the coronavirus hit. So do you think that would be a fair strategy to take on federal level?
I actually think it is, right? I think that what Canada is trying to do is make sure that they are, quotes and quotes, bailing out businesses that were this crisis not be occurring right now would have fared well and would have continued to do well versus businesses that maybe for whatever reason, whether it's competitive governance, you know, alignment with supply and demand, whatever the business reason that weren't doing well, receiving financial help that in the end will not solve the problem. So I think it is reasonable and it's certainly better than nothing.
Exactly. Well, there is definitely a lot of uncertainty, but one thing is for certain, we're going to expect some major changes in the cannabis industry, it seems like around the world.
So the global aspect of it, and maybe this is a good note, one thing that's become really apparent is that there are now, what, over 69 countries, maybe 70 at this point, because we've had a few in Africa, around the world have legalized, and the industry has, as although it remains emerging, right, and relative to other industries, potentially even relatively smaller, it is becoming tighter. And the industry on a global scale is tighter in terms of what's happening across one region affects another. So when you say there are going to be changes on a global scale, I would say you're 100% correct. Because at this point, we're all impacted by what everyone does, whether locally, regionally, or globally. So I guess it's our responsibility to make sure that every move we make is an educated one, and preferably one based on facts, good information, data, and intelligence.
Thank you for that. Well, our last topic, it covers MG Magazine's coverage of the Global Cannabis Town Hall event put on by New Frontier Data on April 2nd. You know, it was really coverage of the impact of the ongoing health and economic crisis and talking about challenges and opportunities across regional markets around the world. It was an incredible event, provided a lot of comprehensive deep dive into the industry in every part of the world. But so our question to you is, as far as planning and production of such a huge event, how are you able to pull that off in such a short amount of time? Because I think that's the question on a lot of people's mind that sat in for part of it or the whole day.
You can't see me, but I'm smiling. The number one thing that made it happen, and I say this a lot, and I'm going to continue to say it shamelessly, an incredible, incredibly talented, perseverant, tenacious workaholic team that rallied behind this effort. And the New Frontier Data team, but also its partners, right? As I mentioned earlier, collaboration is really important right now, uniting against this common sort of quotes and quotes enemy. This crisis is important. So we're very fortunate to have partners across the globe, right? We had 1 to 2 partners in each of the 4 regions that we cover to support us. But at the end of the day, when it came to pulling it all together, it came down to the New Frontier Data team. And again, very talented and very strong, but there was also one very particular thing that I think helped us move mountains, because to put that event together in less than, I think it was exactly 15 days at that scale was no small feat. I know that many of us, if not all of us, slept very little, and everyone was rowing in one direction, really focused. And I think, again, the one thing that I think was different from any other time is this feeling and this conscientious recognition that what we were doing by putting this together was very important, not just for us and our job and New Frontier Data. This was really important for the industry, because I think we all felt strongly that very big decisions, material decisions, are about to be made and are being made, whether it is operational decisions of staying in business, merging with another company, buying another company, of financial reasons, investors putting money in or not, policy reasons, you know, federal legalization versus not, who to give help to, and then scientific and research decisions, right? What we're in the middle of, this is a health crisis. We knew that equipping those decision makers that will make decisions will impact us with the right information, with true information, to get in front of potential waves of misinformation was truly critical. And we felt a sense of responsibility. And I think that that moved us beyond anything else that could have moved us. And I'm very proud of that. And I truly, sincerely hope that the information that was shared does indeed help us all so that those decision makers make, well, the right decision, right? An educated decision and responsible decisions.
Awesome. Well, now this is a tough question since the town hall was an all-day event and our podcast is 20 to 30 minutes. But can you share a few items you learned from the panelists that day that maybe something that surprised you or was something unexpected?
Well, there's a lot to learn, and you're right. There's not enough time, but a couple of threads that we're beginning to pull, and this is early threads that will continue to substantiate, and I want to be very clear about that, right? We report, we don't opine. But some threads that we're beginning to see it's almost like each region is beginning to lean towards specializing in a particular vertical of the industry. When you think of the industry as a whole, right, there's a whole cycle, right? You go from seed to sale and everything in between. And we tend to group it when we analyze verticals, but you basically have sort of anything that has to do with the processing of the plant. So cultivation, extraction, anything that has to do with putting the product together. And then you have the consumption portion of things, right? Where is everything about how do you engage with that consumer or that patient? And then you have sort of this arena of research and science. And then there's other areas such as trade and distribution, not just distribution locally, but distribution across nations and regions. And there seems to be sort of this beginning of leaning towards each regional strength, which would be interesting. For instance, Europe, one of the things that we saw is that European countries are beginning to see that centralizing cultivation or scaling cultivation in the region may be challenging, right? The land, the climates are not optimal. There isn't a lot of additional land to scale. Labor force is certainly of higher cost. So they're looking, they're more at this point, and especially with sort of food and beverage and health and beauty, large multinational food and beverage and health and beauty being hubbed in Europe, you're beginning to see Europe almost find it in niche in sort of this B2B sort of vertical. I don't know how to say, like cluster of verticals. Then you see Asia. Asia seems to really be leaning into the research and science. Not to say that cultivation will not occur, but in terms of the expertise that is flowing to the top seems to be truly centered around very advanced scientific research, applications of cannabis and terpenes, and I'm not going to talk science because I'm going to make a fool of myself, but towards sort of cancer treatment and really complicated conditions and diseases. And then you're beginning to see Latin America that is sort of very, very clear on what they can and cannot compete in and is very, very clear and understands well what they can compete in. And they know they have the climate. They know they have the land. They know they have the labor force. So you're beginning to see them leaning into really sort of that cluster of cultivation, processing, sort of how to get the product made. So given this situation now we are, where we are all isolated, but at the same time united in sort of against this common challenge, it might be interesting to see how these regions almost become links in a chain that makes the entire ecosystem of cannabis come together. Again, a little bit theoretical at this point because we have to substantiate it, but if you listen to the entire day and listen to the very diverse set of very, very talented experts, you can begin to see that happening. And it's almost forced right now because efficiency is going to be critical to this industry locally, regionally, and globally. And in order to be efficient, one tends to want to specialize in what they do best. So rather than happening domestically, which we've seen that happening in countries, right? Companies, you know, they all center what would they do best and they specialize. In this case, it's not even a country specializing, it's a region. And I think that's something that I at least have never seen. I'm not an economist, but, you know, relatively educated. I've never seen that happen before. So That's what I would pull out as something that was surprising and that I'm very interested in continuing to follow. And I'm sure we will be reporting on one way or another.
Well, that's a positive note to have a little silver lining that maybe this slowdown has accelerated people into finding what they're truly accelerate at and truly do well at and can zero in on that. So that's great news. Now, if you missed the Global Cannabis Town Hall, you can purchase recording on our corporate site, newfrontierdata.com. And if you're at home like most of us and have, 6 to 8 hours to kill, there's some really great content on there. So, Giada, thank you so much. But before we say goodbye, any parting words for our listeners?
I always close it this way. Stay safe, stay healthy. And thank you for listening.
Stay home.
Stay home. Yes, indeed. And stay home.
Well, thank you all for joining us at Canna Week. Please be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast and check out New Frontier Data's Canna Byte for more in-depth coverage of the global cannabis industry and Equio for industry-leading data and intelligence services. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Until next time, stay healthy, stay safe, and stay home. Thank you. New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.